CKNW News Talk 980 presents The Brad Brooks Show. Now, here's CKNW Talk Show Idol winner, Brad Brooks.
Thank you for listening to the Brad Brooks Show here on CKNW News Talk 980. On this show, we have great conversations about how to be more successful in business and, more importantly, in life. We invite the world's brightest and most interesting people to talk about the things that can make the biggest differences in our lives, both professionally and personally. Next week on the show, Roy Osing will be with us. He's a former TELUS executive turned consultant. We'll be talking about how to be different or be dead, his new book. You can get more information about all of our guests at our website at www.thebradbrooksshow.com. Typically, when we think about passionate workplaces, we don't immediately jump to financial institutions, yet that's one of the industries that our next guest has helped through her programs that create immediate culture shifts and generate real results to the bottom line. Roxanne Emmerich joins us this evening to talk about her new book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. Roxanne, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here, Brad.
Let's start off by getting some misconceptions out of the way. Now, you help companies create a workplace that's more fun. I'm assuming that this is more than just pool tables and pizza Fridays.
It isn't just about clown noses. In fact, it's not about that at all. It's about creating a culture that wins. And so there's no need for this crazy recession to be going on and things to be out of control when the leading predictor of future profitability is the culture of an organization. So fun is not frivolous. Fun is what happens. You know, in fact, only the fun survive. Fun is what happens when people get about massive results and celebrate the steps along the way. And we've forgotten how to do that pretty darn quickly because remember your very first day when you came to work?
The very, very first day.
Very first day of maybe even your very first job.
I was late by half an hour.
Is
this a good setup for it? But I was really excited about it when I got there.
Okay, well, so for most people, we come with our shoes shine and we're pressed up, and we've already told our mamas we're going to be amazing at this new job. And we're committed to being extraordinary. And then within about 2 weeks, we discover we work with a lot of people who have issues. And as a result of it, you know, we discover they're shooting wildly for mediocrity. And so we lower our sights from this extraordinary commitment that we've made to ourselves to be amazing down to where, to the playground where everybody else is playing. Mm-hmm. And the fun just goes away. And so the Thank God It's Monday book is about how do you get your whole team to start playing the big game again and start having fun doing it. So that there's no need for all the layoffs and all the craziness and to sign up for a recession during times like this, because people are getting about making great things happen.
I want to touch on something that you brought up just a moment ago. You said that a strong culture is the leading predictor of future profits. Where does that research come from?
Oh, I've seen that in several different places. But let me give you some real life examples of that so that you can really see this come into play. Right now, the Fed in the United States is predicting that U.S. banks will lose $599 billion this year. And as you mentioned earlier, we work with a lot of financial institutions, although we work with all kinds of companies from pharmaceuticals to entire companies to you name it. And what's fascinating is that the banks that are working with us right now are having record quarters and record years. So they are not signed up for the recession. And it's just simply by shifting the culture. And you know, another perfect example is Southwest Airlines. Here's a company that was listed by Money Magazine as being one of the top 30, actually was the number one performing stock over 30 years. Well, here they are in the airline industry. Didn't they get the memo that this is supposed to be miserable and nobody makes any money?
Right.
And so fun is, in fact, the ticket to making it happen. And so during times like this, only the fun survive. It's about making the, you know, why do we need to come into work on Monday morning and be miserable?
It when you think about how much time we spend at work, it's very sad to think how many people are miserable. Now, but all of us, I think, have been in these workplaces where they've been less than stellar when it comes to culture. And typically, I've cycled through several thoughts. First of all, I think maybe it's me because I'd like to blame myself. I'm very self-loathing that way. Two, I think maybe I should get out of this place. Sometimes I move right into blaming. I'll blame the management. I'll blame the support staff. I'll say, maybe we just need to hire more people. Sometimes I'll blame the product. If our product was only this, or if our prices were only lower, then this would be a better place to work. Are those typical responses that you hear when you talk to people about this problem?
That's exactly the situation, is we're always trying to blame out and or go into that self-loathing, and none of those solutions are ones that will get us where we need to be going. So the solutions that work is to say, okay, how do I make a change and make it fast? That's really all that really matters. You know, let me give you an example of that. Back before I started this business, I've been doing this for 20 years, where I've been going into companies to do these transformational kick butt kickoffs, as described in the Think Fast Money book. But before doing that, I had a real job, and my real job was to start new banks and brokerages for a bank holding company. And we set a national record in terms of growth and profitability, but I remember little steps along the way, and I was very inspired by someone I had hired, and I watched how she handled the guy who had hired me. So one day she goes running into the office of the guy who owned the holding company, and this was a guy who was a big, you know, big dude in terms of being important, and here's this young little petite woman goes, and she just goes stomping in his office with a good look on her face. So I'm thinking, now what is going on? And she goes in there and she says, Dwayne, we're trying to teach our tellers to be connected with our customers, and so when you come in the morning and you walk right by our tellers and you don't know their names and you don't make eye contact and you don't ask them how they're doing, it's really hard for us to teach our tellers to be connected with our customers. So from now on, can you stop by the teller stations and just kind of get to know them and just spend 30 seconds every morning? And he said, sure, I'd be happy to. And I thought, whoa, I didn't know you could do that. Because, you know, most of us are indoctrinated in the concept of victimhood, which means all we can do is say, oh, he doesn't get it. What a loser. You know, how does he expect us to do that? And we go into this whole story of why he's wrong, and therefore we can't do our jobs. And so the whole thing that I've been teaching for the last 20 years is how you do anything is how you do everything. And so you take charge every step along the way. And people don't think they can take charge. They think that they're a victim of the circumstances of what's happening. Would you like to hear a story, Brad, about someone who I think is the epitome of someone who just kind of took charge and changed their life completely?
Yeah, fire away. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Let's hear that.
I have hundreds of examples, but there's one I really love. There's a woman who started in a bookkeeping department in a bank, didn't have a college degree. And so when we came to start working with their bank and we did the kick butt kickoff, she asked if she could be a part of that process. At the time, she already had moved into a senior executive position and was supporting and actually kind of like an assistant to the president. At that particular point in time, she decided she wanted to take on this initiative and really run this process that we were showing them how to run.
Mm-hmm.
And so she did. And now here's an organization that had not grown more than 2% a year for 10 years. They had tried everything. They had reorganized. They had restructured. They had centralized, decentralized. They had done sales training, strategic planning, you name it. They had invested a ton of money with outside consultants. Nothing was working. And they said, if this doesn't work, they're going to sell the place, because they didn't have a choice.
Wow.
And so she says, let me help out with this. So she steps up and she helps administer this whole process. And within 30 days of the kick butt kickoff, they had grown 35% annualized growth, more than they had grown the previous 10 years combined. And then it continued from there, and the profits went through the roof, and the growth continued to go through the roof, and for years and years it just kept going. Well, within 6 months, they had made her the president. And within another 6 months, they had made her the CEO. Now, here's a woman who could have said, I don't have a college degree. Nobody ever does anything for me. No, management would never listen to me. But she didn't. She stood strong and tall and said, I'm in charge of my life. I'm in charge of turning this thing around. And that's exactly what we've been teaching, is that everyone must understand that leadership is not a position, it's a way of being. Anybody can step up. In fact, everybody needs to step up, especially in times like this.
And when you do, you find people gravitating towards those catalysts. We're speaking tonight with Roxanne Emmerich. She is the author of the book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. We'll come back in a moment. We'll talk about what it takes to get started. How do you initiate that change? You're listening to The Brad Brooks Show on CKNW News Talk 980.
You're listening to The Brad Brooks Show on CKNW News Talk 980.
Hi, welcome back. We're speaking tonight with Roxanne Emmerich. We're talking about company culture and what it's like to have a really fun culture and where that comes from. Her book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love, has just been released. Roxanne, you write in your book that you have taken creating a fun workplace and distilled it down into what you call a repeatable, predictable process. Now, when I say that out loud, it doesn't sound like that much fun. It sounds like you've got the engineers helping you with this. Tell me what that really means as far as predictable and repeatable.
Okay. Well, I'm a firm believer. I know, Brad, you have four kids, and so I'm sure that you have family rituals. And there are certain rituals that if you don't make happen, your kids will be all over you for not making happen. Well, the same thing needs to happen in organizations. You need rituals of celebration. And that's part of the process. Nobody really takes much, puts much energy into understanding how the brain works, but our brain neural pathways are extremely flexible and can be reshaped very easily and in a way that lasts. And so, for instance, there's a lot of Gen Ys right now in the workplace, and they're used to video games. And so in a video game, you know, you get the point, and you get the hurrah, you know, and everything is a big deal.
Right.
And you get reinforced right away. Well, you come into the workplace, you do something right, and there's no bells and whistles going off. And so what happens is the brain goes, well, that wasn't that good, that wasn't that important. I'll just go get distracted and do something else. And so, you know, what we recommend is that the organization create daily, weekly, and quarterly celebrations and huddles and processes to make sure that, first of all, you define like the 3 to 5 critical drivers, the 3 to 5 key initiatives for the quarter, and then everything about that is celebrated. And what that does is it keeps the brain's focus, because I find the biggest challenge of leading people is keeping their brains focused on what matters. Oh, my gosh. From A to B, there are about 3 million different options in terms of how to get there. Every one of them takes a whole lot longer than a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And so the process of celebration keeps people figuring out how to get from A to B faster. And so they go. They discover there is a straight line, and if I go straight there, I'll get celebrated, and my brain will get the Pavlovian response of "Ooh, that's good. Do more of that." And so, you know, during times like this, you know, during recessions, people need more sales. Well, what is your process when you get a sale? Well, how is your brain getting reinforced? Are people high-fiving it? Are they ringing a bell? Are they celebrating it with a positive focus at the beginning of their weekly meeting? Are they celebrating that in the morning huddles? Those are the kind of things that matter in order to drive the behaviors that need to be changed. And so, you know, the key here is, what are the things that you do that celebrate to shift the brain so people go, way to go, way to go, way to go? And the fun part here is management shouldn't have to be doing this. This is something that happens from the bottom up, and that's part of what we're teaching. And the Thank God It's Monday process is everyone steps up to make this happen. I think ever since the book came out, it's been hitting the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. And I think it's because companies are reading this by the box. In other words, they buy enough for everyone, and then they read through it together, and they say, okay, now we'll do these two chapters, now we'll do these two chapters, so that people are getting this stuff together and indoctrinating in the information. And so I think that's why the book is doing so well. I can't explain it other than that. I really can't. But I just think it's going out in bulk because companies are going, okay, here's a way where we heal and get about doing the right kind of things. And it's about rewiring that brain in a very positive way by getting those systems in place.
Let's look at the other side for a moment. When you walk into a store, or a garage or a restaurant, can you tell, after being in this industry for 20 years, can you tell almost immediately whether they have a good culture or a bad culture?
I can tell within a few seconds of walking in the door the feel of it. And then within 3 minutes of listening to the language, I know exactly what's in the way. I started off as a commercial lender right out of college. That was my first job. And so I made loans to small businesses. And when I would walk into the business, I would go, you could just get a sense for what was going on there. And so I found out that, you know, beginning then already, I was beginning to walk in and going, hey, have you thought about doing this? And hey, have you thought about doing that? And I could always see opportunities on how a business could shift and make different results happen. And I realized that's my gift. I can walk into a business, sniff, figure out what's wrong, and figure out how to fix it, and show them how to fix it very quickly. So one of the things that I pay attention to, Brad, is the language. So, you know, there are the excuse people, you know, and so if the language is, well, I could have, except, or but, That tells me everything about, well, goals mean nothing to these people. The word means nothing. They just kind of, you know, show up and punch in every day, and they act busy all day long, but they're not about results. Because if an obstacle hits along the way, they go, well, Brad, I don't have to do that because I have this story on why I couldn't.
Right.
Stories do not equate to results. And so I watch for that language. I watch for victimhood language. Victimhood is a very, very, very powerful force in most workplaces. Victimhood is the, oh, they would never listen to me, or somebody in bookkeeping should do something. Never thinking, hey, get your hiney over there to bookkeeping and tell them what you need and ask for that in a declarative way and then ask for a commitment for the change. You know, so people instead want to go, oh, poor me, as opposed to stepping up and making the good things happen that will create the results. So those are just two of the things I watch for, but language is the precursor of results, and language is always the dead giveaway about what's coming up and how and what kind of results a company gets.
I've noticed as I watch top performers in almost any industry that there's almost what I would call a sense of incredulity that occurs when there's a shortfall. If you watch a professional baseball player, a fielder who drops the ball, he looks like you just told him his best friend died. When I was on the set of Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares a few weeks ago, and watching him, he is just absolutely astounded when someone makes an error and doesn't care about it. He doesn't mm-hmm. care if you spill soup on the soup on the plate. He just wants you to wipe it up. And if you don't do that, he just goes, why wouldn't you do this? I can't make it more simple. Now, and in stronger language, of course, if you've watched the show. But it strikes me that there's this sense of disbelief that anyone would have standards that are any lower than what's the best.
You know, what people don't understand in business is that it's kind of like being a brain surgeon. So in brain surgery, you don't get to say, oh, oops, I was having a bad day, or oops, I got distracted because my kid called in. I mean, you don't get to say those things for very good reason. But in business, people think, oh, well, I tried. And so, you know, on page 37 of the book, I have the key messages for a more motivated workplace. And the fourth, fifth one is show you care to your colleagues, your customers, your vendors, and every encounter, make it obvious. Well, it doesn't look like you care if you make a oops and you don't go, oh my gosh, that's terrible. That shouldn't have happened. Here's what I'm going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again. I am so sorry. That shouldn't have happened. You know, if you don't have that kind of commitment in your heart to the excellence, then you know, somebody's going to get laid off in your organization. It probably should be you, but because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing and you don't care about it, that will have an impact. And, of course, these are the same people who in the unemployment line complain about their managers going, oh, we were poorly managed. Stop blaming management for poor management. Step up and be a leader. And so, you know, are you showing you care?
Yeah, it's just such a powerful message. When customers see that, number one, you can make mistakes, and that recovery, I mean, studies have shown this, that the recovery that you make as a company, when you have a gaffe and you fix it, you actually go up in terms of loyalty as perceived by the customer, as opposed to if you'd never had a problem at all. Like, it actually helps you to recover well because you care. We're speaking tonight with Roxanne Emmerich. She is the author of the book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. We'll come back and we'll continue this discussion about how to improve your workplace so that it's a fun, vibrant place to work. You're listening to The Brad Brooks Show on CKNW News Talk 980.
You're listening to The Brad Brooks Show on CKNW News Talk 980. Once again, here is Brad Brooks.
Hi, welcome back. We're speaking tonight with Roxanne Emmerich. She is the author of the book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. Roxanne, you talk about having unreasonable goals, and frame that first of all. What do you mean by unreasonable?
Well, it's unreasonable to be profitable during a recession. It's unreasonable to grow during a recession. And in fact, you know, history has proven that the time to really grow and pull ahead is during a recession. And so prior to this recession happening about a year and a half ago, I called all of my CEOs that are on a full program with us and left them all a message on a late on a Friday evening before I went off to date night with my husband. And I left everybody a voicemail, and I said, okay, I know the end of the year is here and that you're going to do your beginning of the year State of the Union kind of address to your employees. Please put something in there that says something to this effect. The world will be talking a lot about a recession over the next period of time. We did not sign up. In fact, we are going to have the best year ever. And so this is the time when we pull ahead. So let's outsmart, out-execute, outperform in every different category and show everybody what we're made out of. Well, I can tell you that a year later, pretty much every CEO sent me a notice saying, that was the best thing I ever said to anybody. It's unreasonable to make money during a recession, but you better be doing it. So, and it's always about being in a state of being unreasonable. Reasonable people never make anything great happen. You know, if you say put a man on the moon by the end of the decade and you only have 15% of the information you need to accomplish it, that is unreasonable. And yet it's what motivates us. It's what brings out that spirit in us of why we come to work, is to have that magnificence of us come through. And so, of course, you better be about being unreasonable and say, I have no idea how we're going to get there, but we'll get there. We'll figure it out, is exactly the kind of language of people who win.
Improbable but not impossible is one of the phrases that I pulled out of the book as far as the goals, because those impossible goals, the concern that I have when I hear someone say set unreasonable goals is that that gets carried a step too far and impossible goals are created, and that does nothing to create that loyalty. Do you, or with your customers, it does nothing to create the loyalty with your employees or the excitement or fun that you really want to create. That sense of winning goes away. It's not enough at the end of the year to say, well, you know what, we fell short of this goal, but it was a good effort. Mm-hmm. When really the good effort should have been what the goal was.
Yep, exactly.
Or the results that the good effort provided. Do you work with companies as far as creating those goals?
Absolutely. It's about getting clear about what are the 3 to 5 things that you're going to make happen. And then how do you align everybody and everything to make that happen? Here's the problem that almost every business has. They overcomplicate the heck out of everything. And so they have this strategic plan that fills the whole book that's ridiculous, as opposed to getting it onto one page. Every system they have is overcomplicated and overly crazy because people just, over-operationalize everything. They don't know how to keep things simple. And when companies are growing, they constantly hit what's called the ceiling of complexity. So at every stage, to get to the next stage, you cannot get through it unless you go back and simplify everything. And so every business hits it. Know that if you're not there right now, you'll get there soon. it's part of what's called growth. Mm-hmm. And so, how do you keep people focusing on keeping it all simple? But then you can have these unreasonable goals without being out there crazy. But the key is whatever those are, you got to bring it down into small chunks for people so they go, okay, 47 new accounts this month. Okay, well, how many is that in a day? Okay, so what behaviors do we need to do to make that happen? Okay, well, I can do that. And so, you have to make it seem feasible. And it has to be a stretch, because at the end of the day, we all want to be a better person than we were the day before. And if our goals are shooting wildly for mediocrity, then we don't have to be a better person. And so part of what we come to work for is to be challenged and to go, man, I have no idea how to do that, but ooh, I got to do that. So I'm going to have to be a better person to make that happen. Now, people always want to give a bad rap to people like Bill Gates and Oprah and people who have made a lot of money, never really understanding that to become someone who has amassed that kind of wealth, they had to become really amazing human beings. They always say, if you take away the money from a millionaire, that millionaire will make it again quickly because of who they had to become to attract the $1 million.
Right.
So, and one of the things that people do wrong in terms of their consciousness is people who are jealous of someone who has amassed some wealth will never be able to amass wealth, because by the very spiritual nature of that, they push it all away. And so, how do we become abundant in our consciousness? How do we become more conscious about how to make a difference in the world, as opposed to just suck up the air every day long? I mean, I always tell our kids, there's 6.6 billion people on the planet. Nobody thinks it's all about you.
Yeah.
So get about making a difference. It's not about you and your stuff. And if you think it is, you will have a very miserable existence. You will never have a happy day in your life. Relationships will not be fulfilling for you. because when you are self-centered, things don't work. Now, I'm not saying be codependent, but between those two is a very healthy place to be, which means as long as I'm breathing on this planet, my life will make a difference. If I can, Brett, I'd love to tell you a story. There's a young gal in one of the banks that we work with, a teller who didn't have a college degree again and you know, just kind of moving along in life. And at the end of the year, at Christmas time, she received 54 gifts that were hand-delivered to her.
Wow.
Now imagine how inspirational, how caring she had to be in order for 54 people to stop by and give her a gift as a teller in a bank. That tells you everything about the concept I cover in the Thank God's Money book, which is life gives to the givers and takes from the takers, and the world has a perfect accounting system. And so, you know, when you're giving like that, look at how the world takes care of you. And you better believe she got promoted. You better believe that she'll continue to be promoted all through her life because she has the right kind of consciousness. And
that's
so
a great story.
We're going, well, that's not fair. Well, it sure is. It's how the life, it's how the world works. And so, for those who are waiting for someone to take care of them, as opposed to be givers, life just doesn't work very well.
We're speaking today with Roxanne Emmerich. She is the author of the book "Thank God It's Monday: How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love." We'll come back in a moment. We'll talk about Hoopla and what that has to do with your business. You're listening to the Brad Brooks Show on CKNW News Talk 980.
You're listening to The Brad Brooks Show on CKNW News Talk 980.
Welcome back. Tonight we're speaking with Roxanne Emmerich. She is the author of the book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. Roxanne, I was part of a negotiation delegation, and when I say that, it sounds like it was a big deal. I was the small fish on the team, but I had the opportunity to walk a warehouse floor with the 75-year-old founder of this $4 billion company, and we were walking across the floor at midnight. He knew everybody's name, and he knew a story about the majority of them. He would tell me, oh, they came with us on a trip last year, and we built a hospital in Africa. He had the kind of spirit that you're talking about here. The attitude at the top seems critical. And while we talk a lot about taking personal responsibility at any level of the organization, really driving forward and trying to be a better person, saying, you know, we're going to make a difference in this workplace, at some point, don't you need the buy-in from the top in order to make this change sustainable?
Oh, it sure helps. But let me tell you how that buy-in at the top can happen, because I've seen it happen several times where we've had people who have come to me and said, if my company doesn't make some shifts pretty soon, I'm going to leave. And I say to them, listen, you can run to something or you can run away from something. If you leave now, you've run away. So why don't you take a stand to get that company transformed? And so I've had people do all kinds of crazy things. I had a gal who went into the CEO's office every day saying, hey, I want you to read this book. Hey, I want you to read this book. Hey, I want you to read this book. This is about a previous book I had written that was about how to transform the culture in banks. And so she went in and into his office over and over again. He kept ignoring her. And so finally she went in one day and said, how about if I come, I'd like to take you out to eat for lunch every Thursday. And he goes, well, that would be wonderful. To what do I owe this pleasure? And she said, I'm going to be reading to you. And so she told him to read the book. Anyway, long story short, at the time we started working with them, when she finally got them to read the book, they changed their growth from like 10% up to 24% organic growth, which was phenomenal. And then she kept coming into his office every day saying, when are you going to bring Roxanne in? When are you going to bring Roxanne in? When are you going to bring Roxanne in? Until finally they brought me in, and he showed, as he's introducing me, he shows these slides of her walking in every day with this little cartoon language above her head saying, when are you going to bring Roxanne in? And so she dripped and she dripped and she dripped until she made it happen. They were going to be going public that year, and so they wanted to have a lot of growth, and we helped them get to 76% organic growth. And so
76.
Here's a woman who was in charge of the IT department who, you know, could have just kind of said, oh, you know, they don't get it over there. But she took a stand. And I have story after story of people who have done exactly that in every position within all kinds of different organizations and different industries. Because they took a stand, they transformed their company. So, yes, it does help to get the top involved, and you have to get them involved. It's just that you have to be the person to get them involved sometimes, and you have to not give up on them, and you have to hold them in a place that they will get it. I have a wonderful story of a organization here.
Just
in,
before you do, before you get into that, let me just ask a quick question. Mm-hmm. Let me ask a quick question before you get into that. When you talk about the executives, sometimes I think we perceive that a CEO isn't even a human. We put them on a pedestal and we say, you know what, first of all, they should be infallible. Every decision should be right. We have utmost right to criticize them. They should not ever speak a harsh word to us. We have those sort of almost expectations. But in reality, CEOs suffer from the same sort of malaise with work that all the rest of us do. They just get paid more. And so
exactly.
they come in. But I've got to think that when that IT person comes in and says to the boss, listen, you've got to read this book. You've got to be we can create a better workplace, that in some small way the inspiration transfers from that IT person back up to the CEO and probably makes them feel more invigorated about their workplace because somebody gives a rip.
Exactly, and nothing makes a CEO happier than being challenged by someone because they're growing too. Now, obviously, if you walk in and say, "I think you're a loser," and we all think you are, that's not going to be met really well. But if you walk in and say, "Hey, Joe, I'm seeing an opportunity here, and I want to be a part of moving this through, and I need you to be engaged and give me some leeway to make this happen. Here's what I see as the opportunity. Here's how I think we can fix it, and I'd like to get permission to go." And they may say no, in which case the perfect thing to do is to go, okay, thank you very much for your time, and come back the next day and go, hey, Joe, I've been thinking. And you say the same thing again, and you drip and you drip and you drip and you drip until finally they go, I get that Shirley really wants to make this happen. Clearly, with this kind of enthusiasm, she's going to, so let me give into this and let this happen. That's the beauty. Nowadays, we just started offering something that will make this a lot easier for people, too, on the thankgoditsmonday.com website. We're now giving away something we used to charge a lot of money for, which is the Thank God It's Monday Monday morning audio message, which lasts about a minute or two. And what we're doing is we're asking work teams to listen to that together. And in that, I'm giving really hard-hitting information about how to deal with energy vampires, how to deal with people who give excuses, how to deal with people who gossip, how to deal with people who aren't focused, how to focus yourself, how to get about results, how to celebrate. And so it's real practical, powerful information. Our clients go nuts over this information. They say it really transforms their culture. And so at a minimum, you get on and you listen to those and you listen to your work team, turn around your department, and then go to your boss and say, look what we've just done here. I want to bring this into the entire organization, but I want to do this powerfully. Let's make this happen. Let's create a Thank God It's Monday workplace. And why not, besides getting a copy for yourself and somebody else who can move this through in your organization along with you, why not get one for your boss, but instead of putting it on their desk and without any notice or whatever and being passive-aggressive, why don't you instead hand it to your boss and say, hey, boss, I got this great idea. I'd like to move this through. Will you please read this book? This is really, really important to me. I think there's some things here we can do that would really transform the results, and I'd like to be a part of supporting you in this. Well, man, wait for your promotion to happen quickly.
Yeah.
Very few people want to step up. Very few people want to really make a difference. And the key is that when they see someone who steps up that way, that will get recognized.
We're speaking with Roxanne Emmerich tonight. She is the author of the book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. We'll come back in a moment. We'll talk about the obstacles that get in the way of making this change happen. You're listening to The Brad Brooks Show here on CKNW News Talk 980.
You're listening to The Brad Brooks Show on CKNW News Talk 980. Once again, here is Brad Brooks.
Hi, welcome back. We're speaking with Roxanne Emmerich tonight. She is the author of the book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. Roxanne, let's talk about trust for a minute because it's one of the last chapters of your book. But in some ways, I wonder if it is not the foundation of all of this. I think all of us have been in situations where we've watched the messenger get shot. We don't trust that competent decisions are being made at the top. We don't trust that another department won't drop the ball and ruin all of the hard work that we've done. We don't trust that values that the company preaches are actually being lived by the leadership teams that are in place. How do you restore that trust if it's been broken?
Well, that's a great question, Brad, because most people don't understand that without trust, there is no foundation for relationship. So let's imagine for just a second, Brad, that like I'm your boss and you come to work late. Okay, great. Now, I'm thinking, okay, how you do anything is how you do everything, and so what else aren't you taking a stand for that needs to get done? And so I come to you and I say, hey, Brad, from now on, you know, start time is 8 o'clock, and, you know, and you weren't here, and this is a non-negotiable, and so, you know, from now on, I don't care what you need to do, but you got to do everything humanly possible to make sure that you make it here by 8 o'clock, and do I have your word that you'll do that? And you say, sure, Roxanne, I'm in, you know, I'll be there. And so a week goes by, and you're on time every day. And then the next week, boom, we're back at it again, and you're late. And so now here's the need for a different conversation that goes like this. Hey, Brad, we talked last week about the need to work on time, and you did give me your word you would do that. And so we do need to talk about being on time, but we have a much bigger issue that we need to discuss right now. And that issue is trust. So when you give your word, Brad, that you're going to be to work on time and then you don't come to work on time, what that does for me is it makes me wonder what is the foundation that we can build our relationship on, because without trust, how can we have a relationship? And so, Brad, how do you recommend that I can get to a position where I can trust you? What would you be doing and saying to make sure that this doesn't happen again and that without exception, when you give a commitment from now on, that your commitment, that your word means something? So now the monkey is solidly on your back, and you're squirming like crazy, and now you get, hey, listen, this isn't just about being to work on time. This is about getting reports in on time. This is about doing what you're saying you're going to do. This is about being in integrity all the time. And so now, Brad, you get a chance to say either, I get it, that won't be happening again, and change your behaviors, or you understand, this would be a really good place for me to leave because I'm not going to fit in here, because these people are serious about giving their word to their customers, giving their word to each other, and being in integrity. And so, you know, asking for what you need from people very directly is very, very important, and calling it tight as it happens. There's a whole section in the book, in the Thank God's Money book, about calling it tight. Calling it tight, Brad, means that if you're late for work and I'm your manager, I shouldn't even have to be the one who brings it up. Every one of your work associates should be saying, Brad, dude, 8 o'clock, man, 8 o'clock, that's the time we come to work. What is up with you? Don't you ever do this to us again. When you come late, it makes us have to scramble to figure out how to take care of clients and creates a craziness, and our clients aren't well served, and so don't do this again.
It's interesting. We have one of the companies that I work with has one of their values as being personally accountable for the team's success.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's written up on the wall. Everybody knows it. We give out awards based on that because there are people who are truly, they go well above and beyond when it comes to that. But it creates a sense of positive peer pressure among the rest of the team. Where if you see a person falling down, you go, dude, you're not living up to this value that we all hold dear.
Exactly. And I love what you just said, Brad, and I just want to acknowledge that, too. And you talked about success. See, here's the big mistake that companies make is they think it's about customer satisfaction, and customer satisfaction is crazy. I mean, who cares if your customers are satisfied? If a satisfied customer, if they can get better pricing someplace else, will leave you in a heartbeat. So the only thing that matters is customer success. And so and when employees begin to focus in on customer success, then they get aligned, then they show they care, then they got something to celebrate, then they've got, you know, testimonials from clients going, woo, 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 I mean, isn't this great? They get to be about caring then when they're focused on that.
It's funny. I was talking with my dad this week about selling. We were talking about some of the sort of basic precepts of selling, and he brought back an old, I think it's a Zig Ziglar line, and he said, stop selling and start helping.
Exactly.
And it
feels like sales, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems like there's this paradox in business where as soon as you forget about the money starts appearing.
That's so true. That is so true. It's interesting. I don't have a sales profile at all when you look at the emotional intelligence information, and yet when I believe in something and I believe a client should be doing something, I never get no for an answer because I think I've let them down if I haven't helped them make the right decision. I'm like, okay, economically here, this brings four, we just ran through the numbers. You got this problem, this problem, this problem. This is costing you about $5 million to fix this problem. It's going to cost this amount. Hello. And so if they're saying, well, I'm not going to pay this amount to get $5 million to the bottom line, I'm thinking, my gosh, I have just been of such disservice to these people. I haven't showed them they can't afford not to get this situation fixed. And that's really ultimately the question is, can you afford not to? And so when it comes to sales, if it doesn't make sense, if you shouldn't be doing it, don't do it. But if it makes economic sense, then get busy and help people to buy and make that buying decision.
And I would suggest that passion that gets created as you build the trust with people who work for you, as you set the expectations and get incredulous or unreasonable about your goals, and then you have people winning, that's what creates that, what we've been talking about all night, the huge returns. You talked about 38% for one of the companies and 74 or something like that, like over 70% organic growth. It's unbelievable. It's hard to fathom.
Mm-hmm. And this is a company that was, you know, doing your typical 12%. This is during good times. They were doing 12% growth, which is, you know, it was good. They were above average performing company by a long shot. And so there's a lot of people who are thinking, oh, well, we're pretty good. Well, good, as Colin said, is the enemy of great.
Right.
And so, you know, and so when you have a bunch of people on your leadership team that are going, oh, yeah, well, it's good enough, that is the kiss of death, because that will then, during bad times, be your demise, because you better learn how to win in massive ways and be able to repeat that behavior over and over and over again so that you can really make those kind of things happen.
Roxanne Emmerich has joined us tonight. Her book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. Roxanne, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight.
It has been my honor, and I would love to come back.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for tonight. Next week on the show, former TELUS executive turned consultant Roy Osing will be with us to talk about what it takes to be different in this world of generic companies and generic products. Thank you to all of our guests tonight, as well as to Andrea Stewart, who does such a great job producing the show, and of course our technical staff here at the station. I'm Brad Brooks. Have a great week.